Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm Eli Roth.
This is Marlon Wayans.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
All right, I'm here with Nick Stein. Hello, Nick. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, Todd. How you doing, my man?
You know, I'm just cautiously optimistic that I get to go back to work. I finally get to go back to Atlanta at some point and start shooting this movie that I had shut down. So that's, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Did it scare you that Atlanta was coming back so soon before most states and that you had to go shoot there?
No, I'm not. You know, what's interesting is I'm not really scared of COVID. I feel cautious about it. And I feel like it's an intense thing everybody's going through. And I feel for all the people that have had it and are sick and are affected by it. However, for me, I've been talking a lot about it on here is like, as producers, it's kind of, that's what we do is we solve problems and we kind of work problems and work through stuff. And so for me, it's been an interesting problem that I've been excited to try and help solve because.
Yeah, no, I was speaking more to, did it bother you that Georgia opened before most states and you knew you were going to be shooting there? Not really scared for your safety, but more scared that was going to turn around and delay production even further. I was worried about that myself. Well, had a client going to go shoot in Atlanta myself.
Yeah, no, because it's, you know, look, there is no vaccine and we are all in this together, right? We all have to take care of each other and we all have to help each other. And so I am just of the mind of, you know, I definitely want to make sure that everybody's safe. That's the most important thing. But them opening early, I think, was interesting because it was we were able to see and gather data and say, OK, this is what happens if you open up and don't socially distance. And here's the spike and this is what this means. And so if anybody would have opened up any state and it went completely sideways, it would have been, everybody would have just been, okay, no. And I think that it's just, since there is no vaccine and we've done the best we can to flatten the curves, that we all have to just now be really safe and take care of each other.
Right. No, I agree.
So I am so excited to talk to you because we are in a time where so many people are blowing themselves up on social media, right? And mostly rightly so. And, you know, tweets that someone did 10 years ago, tweets that, you know, people are, you know, trying to do the right thing. And someone speaks up, hey, you know, you weren't that great in your past. It's social media is such an interesting thing because it's still in its infancy and it is so dangerous in so many ways. And I'll tell you, I have had multiple things blow up in my face on Facebook during COVID. I mean, multiple. No matter what I've said things to try to defend things and been shot down. I've said things that I heard were factual and were read and factual and shot down. I've said my opinions and been offended people. And it's really it's a really tough. I've quit Facebook because I finally got to the place where there was nothing I felt I had to add or read any longer that was contributing to my daily well-being or happiness. It just really got to the place where I finally had a really heartfelt conversation with somebody that I had deeply offended and didn't mean to. It was an opinion about something I felt was unrelated, but when it was presented to me, and it wasn't a race thing or anything like that, and it wasn't even COVID related. It was just something that I expressed an opinion about, and this person really was very, very smartly called me out and said, let me tell you all the reasons why this is really hurtful to me and hurtful to a particular industry. And I was like, holy shit, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, I can see both sides. And it's like, nothing I'm going to say or add is going to really be of any fucking value. And what's great about the reason why I want to have you on is, and then what I want to talk about how you got here, you throughout your career as just as an agent at ICM and an agent at CAA you have had such an incredible career, and you and I have a couple funny stories back when we were first starting, but you have always in my mind had your finger on the pulse and a finger on the pulse of talent and breaking new talent and the people that you have represented, such as Cameron Diaz. You were her first agent, and you think about, like, you were early on in the careers of Robert Downey Jr. and Luke Wilson and Lauren Hawley, and, you know, and then you went over to CAA, and then you had like Selena Gomez, and you had Britney Spears and Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift and Ariana Grande, and the list goes on and on and on, and Demi Lovato. And now you have this new company, and you have, you know, yet another guy that you, this Noah Centineo, who's all of a sudden, boom, he's blown up. And you have, you know, you still have Abigail Breslin, obviously, and you have Alexis Wren. And so you have always been, had your finger on the pulse of new and emerging talent. And then I'll let you talk. I know this has been a long intro for you. And basically every single one of them is massive in social media and really understands the power of it. And so first walk me through, where did you get the idea to become an agent, and how did you come to really getting excited about young talent and breaking those new and emerging stars?
You know, I went to film school at NYU, and then I moved out to LA wanting to just be in the business. And I thought, originally, I'd be a director, but I realized I had no talent to direct when I was in film school. Then I came out here, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I just got in my car and drove here and really didn't know many people and had a little family here. I got a job down after a little while of looking around as Kim Basinger's assistant, and I got to work with Kim along with her executive named Barbara Dreyfus, who later became an agent. And Kim got to the point where Kim wouldn't read a script if she didn't know I already liked it and had an opinion on it. And as a young kid, I couldn't believe what was going on. Well, soon her agent, Bill Block, who at the time had just started an agency called Intertalent, he realized that I was very important in the process. And he started meeting me in for dinners and became my friend, actually. And I had met him through my wife. And coincidentally, he just became a mentor to me. And then after working with Kim and realizing that how much of a process it was and how it all worked and how important every single person from assistant all the way up is important in someone's life, I said, Bill, I want to do what you're doing. So Bill told me he wanted to go where I started, to APA. So I did that. I was an assistant at APA for a year. And then John Gaines, the partner, passed away. And it was heartbreaking. And so did Marty Klein. So it would be the two founding partners of the agency passed away within 3 months of each other.
Wow.
And I was freaked out. I loved them and they were really good to me. And I had a plan to become an agent there very fast because Bill said that was the way to do it because they were a smaller agency and I would succeed there with my young energy. And then so I ended up going and getting a job as an agent at a place called Writers and Artists, where a friend of mine, Bertie Lipson, suggested they meet me, and they liked me, and they gave me, you know, $500 a week in an office and said, go for it and see how that works out. And we'll reassess it in a year. And right in the beginning, I was like, okay, what do I do now? So I'm going to go and, you know, I always believed that beautiful women that could make people laugh were just, they could get away with everything and become and become bigger faster because there was a certain accessibility. And I always believed, even in the old movies, that, you know, the Carol Lombards and the Lucille Balls and anybody that was beautiful, there's lots of them, that was funny, was great. So I called a friend of mine over at Elite and I said, listen, I want to meet any of the models you think are incredibly funny and great and aren't going to be supermodels, but, you know, someone that, you know, you think could be a real actress, because I wanted to look and start there. I started going to showcases and all that. But sure enough, they sent over this girl named Cameron Diaz. And I've never laughed so hard at a lunch. She had just She had just been started a movie called The Mask, which no one was paying attention to because Jim Carrey wasn't a star yet. He was coming off of In Living Color. Ace Ventura opens. The next thing you know, The Mask gets a lot more money from Mike DeLuca, and the rest is history. So Cameron became this, you know, huge ingenue star off of that movie. And then it was about, okay, wow, I've got an eye here, and I got lucky, and I found someone that's an amazing human being and an amazing actress. I knew then I had to get to a bigger agency to do the job properly for her. So I then went to ICM and stayed at ICM for over 10 years. And then I went over to CAA. I guess that's how I got there. If you want to know about the younger actors, I was representing Britney Spears at ICM, and she wanted me to help out her little sister, Jamie Lynn, who at the time had not really done anything than maybe one or two episodes of a little Nickelodeon show. And you can cut me off at any time, Todd. You know, I can.
No, I love it. I do want to just interject one thing about Cameron Diaz is I remember a young 18-year-old Cameron Diaz because I met with her, and I think probably was one of her first meetings, if not the first meeting that she took.
I actually looked into that. I think you were the third. I think Don Granger was the first.
Okay.
Mischer was like the second, and you were the third, only because of availability. But yes, you were right there. You were in there in the very beginning, and I remember calling you and being like, "You just gotta trust me. You gotta meet this right. girl." And you took you, you know, and obviously it was so obvious when you met her what a great person she was. Yeah. And I remember that, and you called me freaking out, and we all like were like, "Wow!" And then it all kind of happened.
Yeah.
And you know how it works.
And then I didn't actually get to work with her until Night and Day. That's how long it took me to finally get to work with her after meeting her at 18.
It's crazy. But like, I think the question you were asking about the young ones is that because of what happened was when I got to work with Jamie Lynn Spears and I went in and started looking at Nickelodeon and the deals that Nickelodeon made with actors and then also the deals that Disney was making with actors, I was like, this is in some respects worse than Motown was in its day. They're taking advantage of these kids. These kids move out and they're talented from all over. And it was right around that time that I said, you know what? I'm going to go after all the best young actors because I think they're all being mistreated. And I was trying to be, you know, sort of like when Kevin Huvane and the group decided they were going to get all great roles for older actresses in the business. There was just something missing there and I didn't like it. So I came in there and none of the big agencies were representing younger talent at that point. And I just sort of started looking into young talent. I picked Lily Collins, was very young, still, you know, in high school. She wanted to be the youngest talk show host ever, didn't even want to be an actress. And the next thing you know, she grew into that. Selena was very, very young. I had Selena and Jamie Lynn Spears at her, with her show at Nickelodeon and Lily Collins. And I had a group of amazing young actors all of a sudden, and no one was doing it. And people were sort of like making fun of me a little bit, like, what are you doing? You know, and then, you know, Nick, are you going over to Beverly Hills High School today at lunch to sign someone? You know, and it became like a funny thing, but a couple of things happened. Through knowing Usher, Usher told me about this kid, Justin Bieber. So I went and immediately met Scooter, and Scooter was nice enough to allow me to become his agent. And everybody, you know, at first were like, they were making jokes that I won't even say on a podcast, but like, why are you signing this 13-year-old? And
13-year-old YouTube star from Canada.
No, that's not what they said. There was a comment that wouldn't be PC to say. And I said, you know, well, whatever. And I remember leaving a staff meeting after I played the first music video and everybody was sort of like making fun, like, why would you show that in the CAA motion picture staff meeting? And then 6 months later, you know, the rest is history. Yeah. But what happened was, Todd, like while I was having so much fun with this young talent, social media was created. Now, I'd like to say I was always ahead of the game in doing that, but it's a bunch of bullshit. The truth is, I just found something that I thought I could do. And I didn't like stealing clients. I really liked developing them from the beginning. And being so fortunate as to have Cameron in the beginning, I learned how cool it would be to build a career from the beginning, not not picking someone off later or stealing them or that. Right. Obviously,
Let me just interrupt you for 1 second, because I think people are going to be like, well, why wouldn't a big agency want young talent? It was back in the day very common for these smaller boutique children's kind of agencies or smaller agencies to develop these young stars. They had a lot of them. And you, like you said, none of them were getting paid, and they would make a lot of them. And then eventually one or two would break out. And then after a movie or so, then a big agency like CAA or ICM or UTA, whatever, would swoop in. And then, you know, their fees were already high enough where it was worth their while. And so you were doing something completely different, which is taking these kids and really sort of nurturing them from the ground up at a big, big place such as CAA.
Well, I think that's part and parcel. That's a big piece of it. But the part I was trying to get to that I think just sums it up is that what happened was when social media hit, these kids that had a lot of fans on that wanted to engage with them, that could engage with them directly, that felt like they could follow their lives. What happened was the power switched. Yep. So the power of Selena Gomez at Disney, even though they had a 360 deal, and for those of you that don't know what that is, that means that they have her in all areas, whether if she wants to do a music album, it goes to Hollywood Records. If she does television, she does features. It's sort of an all-in deal. And that's what they would do with all of these young actors. And those are good because you got to be grateful. Those studios are incredible and they build them up. But what happened is the power shifted to the clients. And with their social media, we were able to use those numbers to show brands, to show labels, and they could release their own music. They can do almost anything. So everything changed. And suddenly I have this great collection of incredible young talent at a big agency. And all of a sudden they became so valuable, so powerful. And then we were able to translate that into all sorts of different areas, and the whole agency got involved, and it became really, really fun. But it wasn't a plan, Todd. It just happened. And I think then there was talk where we said, you know, should we start an actual children's or a kid's side of CAA? And, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but the idea was, no, we just want to represent the best actors in the world, the best directors in the world, the best writers in the world. And if some of the best actors in the world happen to be kids, then we're going to represent them. But if you start to represent kids, what happens is a lot of the kids aren't the best in the world, and they have great careers and they make money for these smaller kids agencies. But when they turn 18, the agencies look at them and say, listen, we only represent kids. You need to go find another agent now, and kind of leave these kids hanging when they've lost their high school and their junior high and they've lost their whole lives to acting. And they're suddenly there, and a lot of them don't have actors, and that's where it goes bad. So what we decided to do was, let's just represent the best in the world. And like then it became people like Anna Sophia Robb and Kiernan Shipka and who I consider and the Abigail Breslins and those people who are the better young actors in the world. And then it's a smaller group. And then as social media continued to get bigger and bigger and artists became a little younger and younger, I think all the agencies started to sign, I think, too many young actors because they get lost if they're not at a certain level. And I feel that's even where it's not great to lose an actor on anybody's client list. But if you lose an actor when they're a child, that is just completely wrong. I couldn't live with it. And so that's why I was much into a less is more game with young actors under 18.
And now you have your own management company called Definition Entertainment.
Yeah.
And now you're a full service person to their career. So let's dive into social media. Social media breaks out. You have all these young stars like Selena, and you know there's people that were early adopters like Ashton Kutcher and Justin and Scooter and those guys, and they figured it out very, very quickly. And so let's talk about the pros and cons, because of, you know, there's the cons of what I was talking about, which is like me on Facebook just annoying people with my dumb comments and my points of view. But there's also like huge important things you can do with your platform. There's this new thing right now where the people are borrowing the microphone, you know, and women are of color are borrowing the microphones of these huge social media superstars. Paris Hilton obviously is a massive following. And so because I want to dive into it, because I'm really not great at it and don't understand it because I'm a dinosaur. Yeah. Early on, what was the kind of what was the theory behind social media, and where did you see it being useful early on?
Well, look, at first, outside of it just being, you know, at first it was just everyone was exploring it like they did with Facebook. And I feel like Instagram became something more for younger people because, as they all say, their parents were on Facebook and not on Instagram, and it became that sort of a thing. But I think, as I'm saying, at the same time, when the young artists, when the Selenas or the Biebers or any of those young people got lots, and even the older people got tons of fans, at first they didn't realize the power of that as far as the business goes or moving and changing the world. And when you, I'll go back to what you just said, I don't represent Selena anymore, but when, because she has a great manager, but when Selena did the other day, she gave over her page, I saw, to somebody to take over the page for the day.
Right.
That's incredible. That's a version of sharing the mic. She's been doing it each day. So, you know, I just think that that's an incredible example of, you know, let some other people speak to your, you know, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 million. She could have more, but I don't know how many millions, but that's a really incredible thing. But going in the beginning, I think it was just at first brands and people paid attention to how many followers did you have? Then they got burned on a lot of deals, realizing that followers can just be a bunch of guys looking at a pretty girl. Followers meant nothing. It was engagement. Then later, after a lot of these brands for a few years got killed by going after some of these Instagrammers with a lot of followers, they then realized it's not about followers. It's about engagement. And then they realized that most guys, their followers, you know, like to watch them do stuff, but they don't really sell stuff. So then it became women had a lot more power than men in that medium, because a lot of the followers of women, yes, guys will follow hot girls, but a lot of women follow women and they love them and they're role models for them growing up and they follow them. So women tend to buy products that other women sell. So women became super powerful in that area. And, you know, so I think social media, it was all about authenticity. I know that's an overused word, but if you look at like someone I work with, Lily Collins, if you look at her Instagram and really study it, it's about the most authentic thing you'll ever see. Selena's a super authentic as well. Kids are smart and adults are smart. They know when someone's Instagram is inauthentic and it's being done, you know, by somebody else. It's one thing if your Instagram's being done by someone else to help you if you're a child. It's another thing if you're pretending it's you and it's not, or you have a, you know, somebody doing it for you. And I think that that's very obvious right away. So I think the authenticity is important. There's so many aspects to it. I think I could, when someone's Instagram, if someone on Instagram is doing things authentic, sharing little bits of their life, taking you on the journey of their career and really part of your day to check out what they're doing as a fan and you just like them, that's great. Then if they're selling something to you, you're okay with it. You're like, yep, they're selling something. You can tell it's something they're making money off of. But you know what? That doesn't bother me. But these people out there that are just, you know, you can tell are making 30 grand here, 40 grand here to just go post for something they don't even care about. I find it offensive. And I think it people are smarter than that. And I think it's a really tricky area. The other thing I'll say about social media, because the most important thing is what you're talking about, how they can change the world. I think that's the most important part of social media, but the business aspects are important too. But I think you can see it being a dangerous tool out there. And I think that a lot of the younger girls that are looking at some of the older girls of this is the way they should act, I think you have a responsibility and you have to understand how many young people are trying to be like you. And so that's why I think people need to really pay attention to what they're doing, and they have to understand that, you know, they might think it's cute to show all these sexy pictures for the guys out there, but the truth is a lot of their fans are girls that are going to try to, you know, think that that's the norm, and it might not necessarily be that. And I think a lot of people are really working hard on not body shaming and changing all of these great things. And I think it's great for women right now, and it's never been in a better place. The other last thing I'll say about this, then I'll let you talk for a half an hour, is that I look at social media, and I always have since probably a year or two in, is social media. If you have good social media and you know what you're doing, and publicists aren't going to like that I say this, but I've been talking to every publicist about the fact that they should have social media people inside the publicity firms that do the social media. A lot of the publicity companies say, you know what, we're publicists, we're great, we're great at our jobs, we're experts, we're going to leave the social media to other people. I think the problem is if you have, you know, X amount of money to spend a month on a publicist, some people are being, you know, convinced to hire a social media manager instead, which is basically being your own publicist with someone helping you make it look really great. And right. And do you know what I mean? So you can be your own publicist, even Todd, you with the, all these amazing followers on your show. If you want to write something now, you can be your own publicist. You could write an article on what you're doing and what you feel about the world now, and you don't even need a publicist. You can do it yourself. Whereas in the old days, if Todd, if you wanted to get something out there or do an article about something, it would have to be a publicist coming to it from a magazine to you, coordinating an interview and a photo shoot and all that. You do it all yourself now. So right. It's interesting and it's a different world. And I think, you know, what I'll say to everybody is if you're not, even if you don't like social media, you better be well-versed in it or you're not going to survive in this business right now.
Yeah. That's the thing that's so crazy about it. Mm-hmm. So much to unpack there. The first thing is just, there's just the unprecedented access to people and celebrities and stars and actors. You know, there was a time in our early careers where, you know, there was this, you know, the mystique, you know, if you can see people on television every night, you're not going to want to see them on the big screen. Or if you see them too much in People magazine, you're not going to want to see them on the big screen. Boy, that has certainly changed over our lifetimes. And that obviously was a completely wrong thought.
Yeah. I think it's different. I think you and I used to, not you and I, but our friend Lauren Holly in the day, I used to joke around in a somewhat nice but serious matter saying, look, you were in InStyle, you know, three times in one issue. It's time to stop going out to too many stupid parties. You know, right. We used to look at it like those magazines, not the rags, but some of those fashion magazines or the InStyles, you know, would follow and take pictures of all these parties. And a lot of these people were dying, you know, not necessarily Lauren, but a lot of people were dying to be in those pictures. So they would go to way too many parties trying to be seen. And, you know, it's the same thing now. People can do it themselves. And if they go to a party, they'll be posting all those pictures. So they don't have to worry about going to that party and make sure they're with somebody and get photographed at the party by the photographer and have a shot of being in a magazine. So the idea, everybody that goes anywhere cool and does anything that they think is going to be picked up virally or make them look great on social media, they do it to sort of glorify their life when I'm not sure that's the smartest thing to do. And I think that, you know, some people can get away with posting a lot and some people, it looks desperate and it depends on the person.
Think about how it used to be, right? It used to be that stars were like, oh, paparazzi, I get out of my car, click, 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 and heads down. And oh my God, I can't believe they're taking a picture of me going to Starbucks. Now there's a lot of people that are like going to Starbucks. Here we go. I'm face chatting right now, live posting. I'm in my car. I'm in the line getting a Frappuccino. I'm coming out. The idea that they were mad because they would be photographed outside or you can't take pictures in my house. Right. And then now they're like, this is my house. This is where
I'll give you the other side of that. You're absolutely right. But the other side of that is that, and I have to have this conversation. You know, sometimes I'll be working with an actor that doesn't believe in social media and they will say, I don't want to do social media. And the studios will be like, please start a social media page and try it. We need it. Maybe you can even do it in the character from the movie, but we need you to get out there and help with promoting the movie or the show. And they have to figure out a way that works for them. But every single time, every actor that gets in an argument about it will say, look, Leonardo DiCaprio does not have social media. And I said, okay, but that's Leonardo DiCaprio. And he is the ultimate and he doesn't need it. It's not that anyone really needs it, but the studios need it to help promote. Leo's a different level. He's at a different exception. There's a few people like that. But you know, honestly, that the mystery, what you're talking about is the mystery. The old movie stars had mystery behind them, you know, no matter who it was, if it was Judy Holliday and everyone thought, you know, she was a communist. Meantime, all it was that she was secretly gay and was, it couldn't come out at that time. So she acted real private and introverted and people started calling her communist. Everybody was private then. Their lives were a mystery. And I think, you know, I think actors, it's much better when you don't know everything about them. That's why I feel that reality television takes away the mystery for actors. So I don't believe the two can mold well together at all, unless you're a host on The Voice or something. I think if you, any of the reality shows, if you do one, the mystery's gone. And I'm not sure you can then become an actor that has that sense of mystery. But if you look at the people out there that are very, very skilled with Instagram, what they're doing is they're taking you on a little journey. They're showing you how cool it is, or that they woke up and their hair is a mess. But what they're not doing is they're not really letting you in on their personal life. They're not showing you stuff that you would see in on a reality show. So they're giving a little taste of their lives. And they're, you know, they're doing it in a certain way. And I feel like that's the perfect balance. If you can take your fans on a journey, you can control the story you want to tell. You can show them what it's like to do prosthetics for 3 hours or 6 hours on a set. You can show them what, you know, how you're up at 4 a.m. being driven to a location and you're sitting in makeup and then you don't even work for 4 or 5 hours. You can show those things. They're fascinating to people. You could show any part of the business you want. Musicians can go in the studio and show what it's like recording a song. But you're not giving away your personal life. When someone went to Starbucks, like you said, and they were shot in the morning, maybe that's not something they wanted. That was their own time. So even though they're posting all this stuff, I think people still are controlling what they're posting. They're making it look like they're showing you every part of their life, but they're really not. Right. And then there are the people that are showing you everything, and those become the Kardashians, and that's a full reality show, and that's different. Right. But they're not actors.
Two things that I found interesting recently and that had a huge impact on me just looking at social media was the Dave show, the show that Marty did and Scooter did and Kevin Hart did about Little Dickie. Because, you know, he talks about that on his show. Like, I have 100 million views. And the parents are always like, how do you monetize that? And, you know, he was a social media sensation that started his own YouTube channel with his music and then crossed over. And then also, so I found that very interesting. And now he's crossed over into a very serious – that show is fantastic and super serious. And that was a really cool way to watch a guy use social media so smartly, and even now using it with his guy that works with him, Gata, who, you know, and he revealed that he had bipolar and depression, and he really handled that so deftly. I found that super fascinating.
I think it's super fascinating, but I think there's a super easy answer here. Scooter Braun is probably, you know, outside of David Geffen and maybe Irving Azoff, you know, and even more David Geffen, because David was in all the industries. Scooter Braun is a genius, and Scooter Braun is, everyone knows what Scooter's done, but the other things that Scooter is a masterful genius. Social media, he understood better than anyone I've ever met, probably still today understands more than anybody else. Scooter not only built up his clients perfectly on social media, handled it perfectly, but he built himself up too at the same time without being an offensive guy trying to act with an ego. He was always in there with his clients. He then built up his social media as a producer on the film, on Never Say Never. He built up his presence, his credibility. The fans loved him when he was in the movie with Justin. They got to know him. They got to see what an incredible, authentic, smart, hardworking guy he is. And so then from there, Scooter used that to, every time Scooter signed an artist, he would talk about them. He would talk about every single charity, anything the world needs help on, he's out there. So Scooter's Instagram became as powerful and as important as any artist I've ever seen. No, very few people. Now, I bet you David Geffen in his day probably would have done the same kind of thing. There are very few people that are that smart and get it on that level. And Scooter came, you know, he just understands. He has a certain knack for understanding the public and how it all works. So it's not a surprise to me that the combination of Scooter's brilliance By the way, Little Dicky is a fucking genius. It's not like he's some gimmick that isn't talented, right?
No, he's as talented
as anyone. He comes in with Scooter there with him, the credibility in that. They put together the perfect show for his talents and everything. And you've got Scooter and his incredible like marketing machine and great company behind it. And it's a great show. And remember, you know, Scooter's first show was Scorpion, I think, was also a great show. So he's not like some lucky producer. And so I think that it was a perfect thing. I'm not sure that I believe that that show or Little Dicky would have become that big or been in that good a show and not taken a lot longer or been maybe it just might have been wasted a lot of his talent and stuff. And if it had gone down the wrong channel. So I think that it was a perfect group of people around him and he's that talented that it makes for an amazing show. Plus, you know, they have guts and they do things that other people haven't seen. And the thing about Scooter, I know you've met him before. Scooter is like one of those guys that he just understands how young people think and he's very young still, but most people don't think like that when they're doing that.
Yeah.
I'll give the credit 50% to both of them.
Yeah.
And anybody else involved with the show. But
yeah. And the second example I was going to give is just Dwayne Johnson, just how incredible he is in engaging with his fans and his brand and how intelligent he is with what he puts out there. And this recent thing with, you know, asking where our leadership is in general, it's just, he's another one who just really, he's so smart about what he reveals and what he shows and being positive. And John Cena too, I must say, those guys, they really put positivity out there. They really put a lot of thought into what they're going to say and they engage constantly in a way that allows their fans to be continually connected and motivated, which now leads me to all the other shit that's going on, which is just all the ways that social media can go backwards for you
in terms of,
you know, because there's instantaneous access, you got this thing in your pocket 24/7 and you can react, in ways that maybe isn't even becoming of your personality or is revealing the darkest parts of your personality, or you're trying to make a joke and get attention, or you want to just fuck somebody over and say something snide and fucked up about them. Or, I mean, there's just so many ways on and on and on and on that people can just go completely off the rails with social media and have it can have tremendous blowback on your career, on your personal life. Yeah. So
I think it goes back a little ways to something I learned from one of my bosses, one of the partner TAs was Kevin Huvane. He said to everybody in a meeting and Kevin speaks what he says. Kevin doesn't send emails. You know, they're one word responses. He doesn't believe in emails. And he and Richard Levitt at one point said to every single agent, and this is like before, obviously, all the social media craziness, but they said, like, anything you put in an email to anybody, you better be comfortable with everyone in the world and your worst enemies and everyone reading it. And it was like, because once you put something out there, it can go anywhere. So I think that same line is for social media. The problem here is, and when I was interviewing lots of assistants at CAA, they would come up to my office and my assistant would give me the resume and I'd quickly go on their Facebook pages. And this is pre-Instagram. And it was wild because I would be like, let me tell you something. And I'd meet with like a really cool boy or girl coming out of like a great university. And I'd say, let me ask you a question. Do you think it's really cool that on your Facebook page, there's pictures of you doing like, you know, hard drugs off a girl's stomach there's a picture of you like doing bong hits. And I know it's college, but like, you understand that your Facebook page isn't even private. And like, I looked at your whole Facebook page before I met with you to be my assistant because there it was, I had everything. So let's talk about your life and what I've seen and how that would translate into an office. And I would say, and it would be really funny, I'd get these thank you notes, like, thank you so much, I made my page private. Thank you so much. I can't imagine if anyone else had seen that. And it was like, so simple. And in my own sons, I said to them, like, you know, guys, like, anything you post, can anyone will be able to see. So you better be very careful that if you post something, and even if your friends post stuff and tag you, know that it's out there, and it's out there and it's not coming back. And it's, look, it's, I also believe that if you look at, you know, some of the current people that are getting blasted out there, I think, look, we're all apologetic. Every one of us has said something stupid or thought something naive. We all could do a lot better when it comes to all sorts of racism, even discrimination to women, to everything. We could all do better. And anyone that says they're fucking perfect is a liar. And so we all need to work on that as a nation, and especially in our business and all around. But I think that, you know, you have to look at the fact that also, if you're an asshole, and you've been nothing but an asshole to people on sets for 10 years, and something like this comes, people are going to dig. And if you make a comment out there and you were anything less than perfect, but you were not a nice person, people are going to come after you more than if you were a nice person. I think that it's all wrong, but some of it is coming out of a place of karma. And I believe that, you know, you don't see as many of the really good guys and good girls getting blasted. And because people know that, look, most people didn't mean that little mistake they made, but they made a mistake. And I love that someone called you up and said, listen, I want to call you out on this. You did this and you owned it and you did it. And it doesn't matter what it is. That's like a really nice way to do it. But if you, and I know you're not an asshole, but we know certain producers that are. And, you know, I think that certain people they won't handle it that way and call them and say, listen, you just made a post about Black Lives Matter or something. And, you know, I happen to know that you're a bit of a racist and you made some comments and you should really think about that. Instead, the people that were not nice people and made stupid comments, they're going to get blasted. And I think that's all part of it. And it's really crazy. And it goes deeper. I mean, there, you know, I think it's very hard to find a person that's been perfect on the planet. So, you know, you can almost find something that everyone's done wrong. And I think the lesson is, imagine that anything you ever post, your worst enemy is going to have. And that's it. And then post positive stuff. If you're going to post negative stuff or anything that might be controversial, don't post it. Don't do it where everyone's going to read. Because, you know, 20 years later, you're up for a CEO job. And here comes a comment that you posted in college. And it was taken out of context and you're done. And I really believe that it's a really, really scary time. And every kid, whether they're in the business or not, should pay attention to that.
Yeah. I mean, look, the post that I made was, you know, just commenting on the media. And, and you know, and a friend of mine who's a reporter called me and goes, you know, I'm working my ass off to try to do a good job. And I was like, fuck, you're right. My snarky comment about daytime television doesn't need to be fucking, read by everybody. And I don't, and the truth is, I don't 100% even really believe it that much. I was just pissed off in the moment, of watching daytime TV hosts kind of just kind of vacillate back and forth. And I was feeling a little bit like, not feeling it, and wrote this post. And it's like, hurt people that I actually care about, that actually do good work. And why do I need to contribute?
But I think if you were an asshole, it might not have been a phone call like that.
Right. Right. No.
And
exactly.
That's my point. And I think that karma's karma. It's if people could just be better human beings all around, and not be as tough and think that being a jerk is a cool thing, or, you know, whatever. Some producers, some agents, some managers, some in every profession, you have your bullies, you have your people that tend to not be very nice people. And wherever that comes from, it could be a variety of things, but it's going to hit you later when you start to fall, or when anything can go wrong, or when they have a reason to. And so I think that a lot of people if this world continues to get better now and everybody learns from all of this, it'll be a terrific thing. But I think every parent must explain to their kids that social media is not a game, and it is there for life. And anything you ever write, post, or put up, even if you deactivate your account, get rid of it, people have it still. And in texts too, people don't realize, like, basically Kevin was right. Anything you put in writing and push send on, you better be okay with your worst enemy being able to put that on in a newspaper, you know? And that's, you know, look, our dear friends, Amy Pascal and group, like, you know, hackers come in. It's like, anything can happen now if you put something in writing, and it sucks.
Right.
And even the Me Too movement was another example. There's a lot of bad people out there, but there were some people that actually weren't bad people that made a comment or two that got absolutely flattened when there were a lot of really, really bad people that somehow got away with their behavior. And still to this day, I don't understand it. And I'm not ever going to play sheriff. But, you know, there are a lot of people that we know that somehow miraculously didn't get called on it. And I feel like there's people are this is a time where everybody's now going to be accountable for what they do every day. There's cameras everywhere. There's social media everywhere. And I think that if everyone can curb their behavior, there won't be issues. But there's no now it's really going to be hard for people to act like assholes because we've addressed women. We've addressed racism. We're going to address all those issues. Nothing's taboo now. And I think it can be a really, really great thing. But people are still sloppy and make mistakes. Yeah. And I also think that, you know, comedians and people that actually get paid to make jokes and make jokes about every single race, religion and everything. It's a tough one. You know, Robin Williams, who I worked with for a nice couple of years before he passed away at TA. Robin, these guys, you know, a lot of these comedians make fun of everyone, but they don't leave anyone out. And it's not like they're really right. racist or against any religion. They're just mocking everyone, you know?
Right.
And I think that
Don Rickles.
Those are in the old days. It's different. We can't really look at the old comedian, but you're right. But
Don Rickles did make fun of literally everybody.
It was horrible, but it was his thing. But I'm just saying comedians, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch because I think like, you know, comedians need to make us laugh, and there'll be a lot of humor about COVID, and there'll be a lot of humor about Black Lives Matter in a good way. Hopefully, I think it'll be really interesting to see comedians talk about how uncomfortable it made people to talk about stuff. If they can spin it in a really interesting way that makes us laugh and want to be embarrassed about our past behavior, it'll be really interesting. But it's a really tricky one to handle, and they are the only ones I think that can make light of this. And maybe, you know, but it's going to be tricky.
Well,
No, I was just going to say Dave Chappelle is a genius. He'll figure out some interesting things to say, but it'll be tougher for other comedians.
Well, listen, where you have trained at the feet of the masters, I mean, Kevin Huvane and Brian Lord and Richard Lovett, I mean, probably those three guys, you know. And Ed LaMotta, geez. I mean, you just look at that as just like Mount Rushmore of talent agents and just intelligence in terms of their representation and just really good guys. And Kevin and Brian have always been very, you know, very good to me and Richard's amazing. And so tell me some advice. You've done already quite a bit, but tell me some advice you give to, because there are a lot of young people that listen to this podcast and a lot of young people want to be actors, along with young people want to be writer directors, and they are on social media, and you've already given great advice about let's not have your bong picture on Facebook.
Yeah.
But just in terms of really being thoughtful about social media and really being thoughtful about their careers. What advice and even just before social media and Kevin saying, you know, don't put anything writing, just as a young person, when they're sitting in your office and you're looking at them and you know they're going to go out, they're going to go to bars and they're going to be, look, our kids are in college and they're like doing college things, you know, I mean, that's what we did. And that's what you're expected to do. You're supposed to learn and grow and make mistakes and fuck up and rebound and fall in love and get your heart broken and et cetera, and meet friends and realize they're assholes and make new friends. But when you're an actor, when you're a director or a writer and you're in the public eye and you're coming up through the ranks, what advice are you giving young people? And what advice did Kevin and Brian give young people to navigate these fucking crazy waters right now?
I don't know what their advice would be, though their advice was always smart. Like, you know, don't put stuff out there, period. And just be very, very careful of what you write in transmissions, emails, and I imagine posts. I've never really talked to them about social media posts, but it's the same principle. For starters, I would do what I've told my kids originally do and anyone else, which is, you know, don't have your real name on your Instagram when you're a kid. You know, have a fake one because A, you know, most kids do because they want to have an Instagram that their parents aren't aware of, you know, and a Finsta, they call it. But there's, you know, there's, you want to, you can still go out and have fun as a kid, but just be careful. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to hold it against an actor as much as they would an executive if they had some pictures where they were, you know, a little crazy in college. It's different when you're coming in a suit and tie and meeting at an investment bank, or you're meeting at an agency, or you're meeting in somewhere, you know, that's very corporate. You know, it's different. If you're an actor, I don't think anyone's going to go back and go, oh, look how crazy so-and-so was in college. That's different. I think, look, I'm from the same school. I giving advice to young actors, how about just being talented and being an actor because you love acting? If you're being an actor because you want to be famous, or you're being an actor because you want to make a lot of money, or you're being an actor because you think it's cool, you're not going to make it. You have to be talented. Some people can get away with being good looking and coming in, or just playing themselves on a TV show. You can tell the ones on Friends that are really good actors and the ones that are just played themselves after years later. I think you can look at actors. Talent is talent. So any young actor, if you're asking me just about actors or music people, if you're talented, someone's going to find you. In the old days, if you were talented, it was very hard to get lucky enough to have the people that make the decisions find you. You'd have to just somehow get to an agent or someone in Hollywood that could get you a shot at a casting director, someone who was different. Now, if you make a self-tape and it's good, agents and managers and casting directors are going to know it's good, and you're going to easily get represented. I haven't seen a really truly talented person not get represented ever since, you know, we had to stop making like videotapes and it was easy to send links around.
Right. Well, let's talk about, I mean, that's what Justin did. He put his stuff online and he was in Canada and people at Scooter found him and said, Jesus, this guy's talented. So if you're a young actor or a director and you want to do that, you can't just put a self-tape of like a audition from, you know, Romeo and Juliet. What would you do?
You can actually. It's interesting. And I was actually talking to an actor last week and said, you know, stop putting your scenes up on your YouTube channel. And she said, why? And I said, because your scenes are really good. Just put them all together and send them to some agents and managers. And she's like, well, you're a manager. And I said, well, I can't necessarily represent you, but I'm telling you right now, putting them on YouTube might not be I don't think it's a good idea. And it was really interesting because I then had a conversation with a casting director and I had a conversation with somebody else. I said, was I wrong in my opinion on this? Because I wouldn't ask if I was wrong if I didn't think there was a chance I was wrong. And they said, you know, you never know. Like the problem is if you put something on YouTube, if an actor does a scene from YouTube, you've got to assume that somebody's seeing your YouTube channel that actually can show that to an agent or manager or producer. If it's somebody that because a scene that you're going to do that's going to get a producer or, you know, an agent or a manager or a director excited is not going to be something that would ever go viral unless it was a comedy person doing something really radical that goes on YouTube. So the problem is about putting scenes up there is that I think sometimes they think if they put their great acting up on YouTube and do scenes that people are going to see it, they're not going to unless somebody can tag it with 1 million followers and it's really good. Sketch comedy actors can do it. And I think it's very, very useful. And you'll see a lot of people and you've seen a lot of people. Obviously, you've done a lot of comedy, so you probably know what I'm talking about. But I think that it's just the idea that an actor thinks that if they put their stuff up somewhere online, that's going to really help them get to the agents and managers. I don't believe that's the case. But here's what I will say, and I'm hoping that I don't get a bunch of bad emails. But I will say that I would not usually admit this, but I'm going to do it because your podcast is authentic and true and you want the truth. When people have the balls to send me an email, like from the Midwest, I'll get a random email. Someone's like, I just graduating high school. I start in this play. And, you know, I've sent you some my resume and some photos and a link to something. I will watch that for about 2 minutes if it's bad at the most. If it's good or there's something interesting, I'll look at it just out of curiosity. Because the funny thing is, I don't get that many people that will go on IMDb and go, wow, who's Lily Collins' agent? Who's Noah Centineo's agent? Who, you know, they won't go there and say that. Oh, let me send this guy a tape because I why not? Now, if there has been a couple of times where I've gotten a tape and I've been like, this person's really interested, and because they were really nice, I wasn't going to manage them because I'm trying to keep a real less is more business as it's my own company and it's very small. But I will then send that to young agents that I know at all the smaller agencies and go, check out this tape I randomly got. Now, you know, I would argue that if an actor goes and sends the same link, and by the way, if it's not great, no point in sending it. But if it's something great, and then send it, because if you send it to all the agents, you send it to the assistants at the agencies, if you go and send those around, you think no one's going to see it. People might not respond, but some people, if it's a well-written first paragraph, will click on it and just see what the person is all about. And they might not watch it for more than 20 seconds, but you got a shot there. And I'm telling you, people should do that more. It's no different than in the old days. We used to get stacks of tapes and pictures and resumes in the mail. And to open a picture and resume, you look at it, you're like, okay, and then I put the tape in. It's hard. A lot of the assistants would do that and scour for talent and stuff. And, you know, you never know where it's going to come from. But I'm telling you, if somebody's really talented and they can put a couple of scenes down, there's no way that there's too many agents and managers and people that will find it. It's too easy to get it in their inboxes. And if you can't figure out a way to find someone on the planet that knows a casting director, a producer, a manager, or someone in Hollywood that can just look at your tape, then you probably shouldn't be in the business, because then you're too passive, because it's not that hard to do. And no, so I think
it takes
that,
one.
And
just
but now music person. On the other hand, music on the other hand is a whole, it's so easy. If you're really, really talented, you can put something up on YouTube and people will start to follow your music. Look, Ariana Grande, when we started representing her and when we first saw her, she was, you know, singing also in her bedroom covers, and she had a 6-octave range and she was insane. She was with Stephanie Simon, and she came over to us at CAA and she was on a Nickelodeon show, and then they did a spinoff of the show. And then when she got older, a few years later, it was time and she was the right age. She started doing music and the rest is history. But you could see that, and everybody that saw that tape, a young assistant at the time, at CAA came to my office and goes, you got to check out this girl, Ariana Grande, shows me this tape on YouTube of her singing in her bedroom. Not dissimilar from Justin's. I mean, Justin's was, when Scooter found Justin, it was crazy. He was doing these tapes, but it wasn't like there was a frenzy. Scooter had to track him down and go to his high school to find out where, yeah. Not even high school, junior high school, to find out where Justin lived and was. And the head of that junior high or whatever said, and I don't want to misquote Scooter, but it was something like, said, but wait, he's a singer? He's a hockey player. No, he's also a singer. I need to find him. They didn't even know. So then when Scooter went and met the mom and found Justin and signed him, you know, and he's living in a tiny little place in Canada, it's a classic story, but it's like Scooter's genius. So then I guess all the kids in school hadn't heard his music. They didn't know about it because he was hiding it because he was a hockey player. And like, it wasn't cool to be a singer and a hockey player, and he was hiding it from everyone. So like, I'm telling you, there's so many talented people out there. They will get discovered if they start posting stuff, because if you're good, you're good. And, you know, I believe that. I really believe it's very hard to find a talented writer, a talented author, a talented singer, or a talented actor that has never been discovered. I just don't buy it. Something's wrong if they haven't been discovered. They've got other issues, or they didn't try hard, or they didn't go for their dreams. You see these people that are like that nurse that sang in the middle of COVID. He was singing to all the other nurses. He had an incredible voice. I can't remember what song he was singing, but it was one of the most incredible moments on TV. And this guy had as good a voice as any of the singers out there performing, but he was a nurse. But he happened to be singing. That was his moment, and it went viral. But like that guy had that talent, but nobody saw it. But as soon as he opened up his mouth, didn't go viral because he was a nurse singing to other nurses, and that was a sweet thing to do. It went viral because he was an incredible singer, and it was a great moment on top of that.
Right.
And I go on, but you get it.
Talent is talent.
And I don't think all the bullshit when actors, I sometimes lecture at acting classes or at colleges, and they'll say like, how long should my reel be? And I'm like, well, how long is it now? Well, it's 7.5 minutes. I'm like, well, how much of on the 7.5 minutes on the reel is great? Well, there's only one scene that's great. I'm like, how long's that scene? They're like, 2 minutes. I'm like, your reel's now 2 minutes. Why would you have anything that isn't great on a reel that people are going to look at? Because it just show them great, All you need is one or two great scenes. And I've signed actors from one or two scenes on tape, complete unknowns. And I just did it again with an Australian girl. And I think that you see something. We're all different. All agents, managers, all you guys are all different as producers. Like, that's why you guys argue sometimes with the studio and the directors about who to cast, because everybody has a different opinion. But we can all agree on who's talented.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice, man. Thank you so much. Lastly, and I always sort of end with this, I usually ask best day on set, but I'm going to ask you, what has been the most excited you've been when you've seen one of those things, like just in your gut, what, you know, just the first blush when you put it in and started like, oh my gosh, this is something major.
Well, I think it was a week after my son was born, our first son. So this was, 26 years ago. I was sitting at home and Mike DeLuca sent me three scenes from The Mask that were sort of, it was a rough assembly. And I watched them and I completely freaked out. Not because it was the beginning of my career, but because I was like, oh my fucking God. I'm like, this is like, Cameron Diaz is a huge star. She did it. This movie is going to explode. And, you know, the famous scene in the bank and the other. So you could just see it and everybody could see it. And I knew at that point, like I jumped off the couch, and then Cameron came over later that day or the next day. And I remember her watching herself on screen. And it was really interesting because sometimes actors are either humble or they just don't understand how great they are. But they're like, oh, I could have done that scene differently. But I remember sitting there with her and I was like, oh my God. And like, and cut to, you know, then there was a long run. I'll say that when, you know, I think I've had three of them. I think when Lily Collins, who didn't want to be an actress, when she first started acting and got out of the supporting roles, and then when she first, you know, did a major picture, just when I saw her, it was like, Audrey Hepburn meets I don't know who in this era. And she was an incredibly brilliant girl. She came obviously from a really interesting, important family, but yet she acts like she was just a normal girl from Harvard Westlake. And, you know, caring and loving, but I was like, oh my God, that's it. Like, she's the real deal. And she's much more than just a great, hardworking, smart girl. She's super talented. And I, you know, you just didn't know because that's not what she originally had wanted to be. And the third one I'll say recently just happened was when I got to see a little bit of Noah Centineo's first, you know, on screen, right? I had only seen The Fosters originally, and then I got to see some of Sierra Burgess and a movie he did in To All the Boys. And I just, you know, I knew within, you know, 2 minutes of watching a scene, this guy has that it thing. He's super talented. He's super smart. He's got everything. And I, you know, my whole career, I didn't usually represent guy actors. I had like most of the girls. And for me to represent a guy, it was very different. I just knew, and I didn't know To All the Boys would become the biggest sensation ever, but you know, it's great. It's really exciting. And that was that. And then on music, I'll just say everybody knows like Scooter found Justin. And I didn't find anyone in music other than I will say that I got a call from a manager that I knew through Britney Spears. And he's like, I'm sending a girl to your office. She's 13. I want to know what you think of her. This girl walks in my office. She's 6 foot tall. She's 13. She's about, you know, skinnier than I am. She's like seriously a beanpole, but yet looks like she's 18 and every guy's looking at her, but she's 13. Comes in my office with an acoustic guitar, opens it up. She's got like a stack of songs in there. And she's like, can I play you a song? I'm like, well, I've never had a song played for me in the office. And I got no tape up front, got nothing. She plays the Tim McGraw song. This is just before she was signing. And I'm like, it's Taylor. And I'm like,
wow.
And the hair, it just happened to me as I'm talking to you on a podcast, but the hair on my arm stood up. And I was like, can you hang on one second? I go, wait, are all those songs? She's like, yeah, I've written all these also. And I'm like, can you hang on 1 second? And I've never run faster down the old PA building, down the stairs, into the music department, banging on every door, trying to find someone. And luckily, Rod Essick from the Nashville office was there. And I grabbed him and them, and they were like going into a staff meeting. I'm like, guys, like, I don't care. You're coming out to my office. And they came to my office, and the rest is history. But that was so obvious, but it was so exciting. And to this day, like, even though like she never was an actress and I was going to work with her on the acting side, and that was when I was an agent, but hearing that kind of talent in a room was so mind-boggling to me. I will never forget it. And that's why I tell everyone, I don't care what age you are. I don't care who you are. If you're talented, someone's going to find it. I'm just lucky I was the person that heard it first in LA. Anyone could have. If they didn't understand her talent, they shouldn't. They don't have a real set of ears. So, well,
she, yeah. She'd probably say it was Taylor Swift, because, I mean, if somebody doesn't know that she played the Tim McGraw song early in her career.
I just saw her at a party last year, and she came running up. She's like, you were the first person to meet me in Hollywood. And it was, I was laughing, and it was just so funny now because she's like this icon. But the truth is, and then the irony was Justin Bieber's first show in Wembley. He warmed up for her and broke his foot on stage that night, and Taylor and him were together. And it was really interesting because he was this little 13-year-old and she was now in her 20s. And it was like watching her take care of him when he broke his foot. It was really interesting. I was like, whoa, this is all coming full circle. And that's it. I could tell lots of stories, but thank you, Todd, so much for having me on the show.
And thank you.
I think it's fucking incredible what you're doing. Oh,
thank you, Nick. I really, really, really appreciate it, brother. Thank you for doing this. I think it's important for kids. And if we could just stop one person from making a horrible mistake on social media, then it would be a huge, huge win for us. So thank you, brother. Take care. Be safe and be well. Okay.
All right. Take care, Todd.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Kirsten Woodward and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use hashtag Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week.